And I started looking at what I was eating and how I felt. And this is my personal experience. This might not work for everyone. If we were to seek after as unprocessed foods as possible, when we're not about to do a hard workout, we're not doing a hard workout, and we didn't just finish one, that provides a super high satiety, and you feel good, and your cognitive function is super high. And then supplementing with protein throughout the day, 3 times a day at least, in regular intervals and regular amounts. And then when you are training or about to do a hard workout, you go for the most processed foods. Those two ways of thinking are so contradictory. You do have to float in and out of the two thought processes.
Yeah. Hey guys, welcome to the Run Free podcast, where we talk about training using our holistic 5 principles. These topics cover a lot of the practices that we use at Run Free Training to make sure that our athletes are covering all their training, nutritional, strength, mental, and sleep needs. Our services include touch points with our in-house nutritionists and strength coach, along with personalized plans, performance reviews, and communication with your own personal coach. We have such an incredible coaching staff, and I really can't stress enough just how helpful it is to have a coach on board with you. To me, a coach is somebody that helps you navigate through this incredibly confusing landscape of endurance training. Coaching is $200 a month. If you're interested in learning more about our coaching services, you can find more info on the website and sign up for a free consultation at runfreetraining.com. All right, guys, welcome to the Run Free podcast. Today we are jumping into the world of nutrition. Jay and I. So Jay, we did the Calorify test, like, I guess that was like a little over a year ago, or less than a year ago that we did our first test, and we both retested since then. But you kind of did this full deep dive into nutrition after that and been tweaking things in your own diet. I know you've been working with some other people on their diet as well. So kind of give us an update, kind of what you've been doing, and we'll go through this slowly. But yeah, Calorify tests, how did you get all interested in what changes you start making?
Yeah, so I think our first test we did was in May of 22 or 23, May of 23. And then we just did another one in January. And honestly, the Calorify test was kind of one of the things that I was like, wow, I really don't know what I'm doing with my nutrition.
Yeah.
Like it was kind of, I was a little bit embarrassed, if I'm just honest about it.
And the reason is, I was like, I felt like I was like envious of your test. I was like, look, Jay's burning all these calories and I got this measly. To remind you guys who haven't listened to that episode, Jay was burning 4,500 calories a day and I was burning 3,000, and I'm like marathon training. So, but anyways.
Well, it was so interesting though, because my takeaway was opposite of that. My takeaway for myself was, I'm wasting a lot of calories. and honestly, I thought to myself, huh, I wonder if I'm a little bit more stressed as a person than I thought I was, because my non-exercise energy was pretty high. Mm-hmm. And I equated that to just, you know, life scenario with, you know, work and kids and family. But as I thought about it more and kind of reevaluated it, I kind of considered, hey, maybe I'm, and I was eating way more calories than I thought I was.
Yeah.
So the Calorify test was like, wow, you're really eating a ton of calories. Like I was eating like 4,800 and burning 45.
Yeah. Cause you actually, and they base that, I think that they base that number of how many calories you're eating, I think that's based on just your weights, your weight measurements during that week, right?
No, I think it's actually based on the true number of the release of the water, or the connection of that isotope to the carbohydrate.
Okay.
And then that's tied to your weight for that week. So they can look at, did you gain a pound? Did you lose a half pound? And estimate what you're eating. And it's pretty close. I actually had another call with one of the Calorify lab scientists, and they think their margin of error on what you're eating is pretty close. like basically closer than any other measurement you could possibly get.
Yeah.
And so that sent me into this like thought process of, I thought I was eating pretty good. What if I can eat even healthier? And what if I eat closer to my burn rate and lean out a little bit? And then also with that, I was like, what if I can lower my stress and keep my same activity level? Can I get my non-exercise activity lower? And the thought process there is, if I can, then I can devote more of that energy to exercise.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, I mean, that's specific to your goal too, right? Because some people might listen to that and be like, why would you want to lower, like in a world that's obsessed with burning extra calories, some people might look at that and be like, why would you possibly want to lower that? And, but it has to do with that physical activity level, right? And them saying, like Calorify's thing is that there's this number 2.5 times your basal metabolic rate that's kind of around about your upper limits of what you can sustainably put out on a daily basis, right? Without potentially getting injured and other adverse
effects. Yeah. And the thought process there for me was to lower my non-exercise caloric burn.
Yeah.
So that I could exercise more and still do the other things that I like doing. And my thought process was to lower that through reduced stress and hopefully lower it through increased satiety as well. Like I wanted to do two things. I wanted to lower my non-exercise activity so I could devote more to exercise. And I wanted to see if I could lean out a little bit. I've always wanted to be in control of my weight 100%. And I think that's true of a lot of people, right? Like, what if, and that was like where this experiment came from. Like, this is the heart of it behind it. I don't have like an ideal body weight or a certain way I want to look. I want to feel good. And I was like, hey, if I want to race fast, if I want to perform well, I know weight is the denominator of VO2 max, and it's important to be able to manipulate your own weight. And so I went into this with like the mad scientist type mindset of, I'm going to see if I can learn how to manipulate my weight exactly how I want to, still feel good, not feel deathly hungry. And then that cascaded into this process of researching supplements more. I even took a class at Harvard Medical to try and learn more about supplements and nutrition. I just finished that class. And I started asking the question, how many things can I do right? Instead of that typical question, like what do we hear all the time when someone talks about nutrition? They're like, tell me the thing that I need to do to lose weight, to gain weight, to be healthy. And I think I shifted my mentality. I was like, I'm going to think about how many things can I do? So I started like just going down every rabbit hole I could possibly find. Like I actually did a bunch of stuff I haven't even told you about. So I got a grounding mat to sleep on, like that plugs into the wall.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know if that's going to help or not, but I want to try it. I started drinking hydrogen water.
Yeah, yeah. I saw
It's like a an high antioxidant water that helps with gut health. I started taking tons of like just D3 and things that I thought I might be deficient in. Got a couple blood tests, did a gene test, and just went down all this rabbit hole. And I went from 162 pounds just before the Calorify test. I'd actually started to like lean out a little bit before that, because I think in the Calorify test, I was like 158. Mm-hmm. But I was 162 in, let's see, maybe March of 23. And now I'm 147. And from a data standpoint, I've been consistent with my running for like almost 30 years. Yeah. It's super consistent. And That March, April, I ran like 4:32 for the mile. And I, for some reason, I'm obsessed with the mile. I've run the mile every year for like 27 years. And so I ran like mid 4:30s. And last week I ran 4:24 for the mile. So it's been like this really linear improvement.
What were the ages that you ran those two times at too?
So I guess 41 and 42. So it's basically a little less than a year apart, 41 and 42. And I think I'm going to run closer to 4:14 this year because that was my first mile.
Yeah.
Of the season, I ran 4:24. But I'm like 13 to 14 pounds lighter.
Yeah.
Something
which
like
is,
that.
That's huge.
That's a lot of weight.
Yeah.
To change. And here's the difference too, is making those changes at the weight I am now, I feel so much better. Mm-hmm. Like my energy never plummeted. It has stayed consistent, like really good. And in fact, I measured testosterone too. Like as I've been going through this process, taking no testosterone supplement, no nothing, just regular vitamins that, you know, everybody can take. And one of the things is as you lose weight and get leaner, typically your testosterone goes up. But there's something about having extra fat that lessens, and high fat diets lower testosterone. So my testosterone is like 850, and it was in the 400s back when we first started a little over a year ago.
Would that be affected at all? Cause like you, and not to jump too far ahead here, but like you maintained, even put on a pound of muscle. So you retained like all your lean muscle mass. I imagine that might be different if you're losing weight and losing muscle mass as well, right?
With 100%. That negatively,
yeah.
I think so. And so there's a really good research study by Bill Campbell that highlights the need for protein. And that's something that we've talked about quite a bit. And he's suggesting that it's closer, we can even get closer to 4 grams per kilogram of body weight protein per day.
Yeah, that would be, and, I mean, the daily recommendation is like 0.8 or 0.1.
It's like one. It's like in the ones now. Yeah. And if you're going to lose weight and maintain muscle mass, it's like 1.6 to 2.2. He's suggesting that if you really want to like maintain muscle mass, it's more like 2.2 to 4. Mm-hmm. And so I've been trying to hit somewhere around 3, 3.5 to 3 for like the last year. And I think that's one of the reasons why my energy is so good. My satiety is super high. And when I did the second Calorify test, I'm eating basically almost exactly what I'm burning now. So I'm in a maintenance phase. Mm-hmm. I'm eating somewhere around 3,400 a day. And this is funny. I thought I was eating 2,800 a day to 29.
Yeah.
And they've said that, most people underestimate what they're eating by, 50 to 100%. So they think they're eating 3,000 calories and they're actually eating 4,500.
Yeah. And there's some things there that I think are like, I think the more I've looked into nutrition stuff, the more you kind of realize how little we know about certain things and like stuff like that, where like how difficult it is to count calories accurately. I think there's a bunch of reasons, but one, it's like, even Hari said this of like, our calorie, I think that the FDA requires them to be within 20% of their estimation of calories, right? It's like, are those accurate, right? And like, even the way in which we acquire those numbers of like burning the food, it's like, did your body metabolize it the same way? So
that, yeah, because there's two things there. One is all the research says that they're estimating 20% on the low side. because they want you to buy the product because 100%. Low calorie is in.
Yeah.
So you're already 20% off on the wrong side of the equation. And then also protein, fat, and carbohydrate have different thermogenic effects. So it's like, you know, 70% of your protein, I think it's like 93% of fat, and then like 97% of carbohydrate or something close to that for those. But yeah, there's a cost to eating protein. And that's part of the satiety point, is if you eat more protein, you feel fuller and you don't feel like you have to eat as much. And the goal certainly for me is not to not eat. It's not to not enjoy food, and it's not to continually lose weight or anything crazy like that. The goal is to be at the optimal weight, to feel good, and to have excellent energy throughout the day. And so I've just figured out for me how to hit that balance. And then I trickled that down and started helping other people. So my business partner and our finance guy with Run Free, Powell, he went from 184 to 158.
Oh.
And he's stabilized now.
Yeah.
So it's almost like if you eat properly and you do level out at some point.
Yeah. What's your body fat percentage at the weight that you're at right now?
I think it was measured by Calorify. It was like 8%.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is supposedly the more accurate measurement.
Yeah.
Now, if I get on like a Tanita body scale, it says like 3 or 4%, but those usually aren't super accurate.
Yeah.
So Hari was saying it's probably actually somewhere around 8% body fat.
And I think it's kind of like, again, I think like whenever you're talking body fat percentage, I think measuring apples to apples is like, say, like if you're doing caliper tests, you just measure that caliper to caliper,
right?
Because those are all going to give you like, and it can be depressing. Like some people get into like the bod pod or whatever, and they get a higher number and like, oh man, my body fat percentage is higher than I thought. But it's just probably more accurate.
Well, the real way to measure body fat is through a DEXA scan.
Yeah.
The dual energy X-ray analysis that actually shoots light through your body and measures all of your mass. It measures your bone mass, your tissue, your fat. Yeah. Like that's really the gold standard of how to do it. But that is time consuming and it takes some effort.
That is the one that I think people typically get a higher measurement from than they typically
get. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. So you feel like you've kind of normalized, like your body's feels like it's like, do you think you'll continue to go down at all? Or do you feel good? Like you're right where you're at?
Well, I mean, based on my Calorify test and other tests that I've done, I don't know that it's even possible for me to go down more because I gained a pound of muscle over between the two tests. So I guess I lost like 13 pounds of fat. But I gained back one of those pounds was muscle, so maybe 14 pounds of fat.
Yeah.
I'm not continuing to lose muscle. And I've now been like 147 to 149 for the last like 3 or 4 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is important too, is the way that I like tracking and the way I like teaching people how to track their nutrition, and what I sent you as well, is this idea that we mostly eat the same things anyway from day to day. Like most people have like a certain rhythm and things they like to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So I create a spreadsheet of things that you already like to eat. And then I just eat the same thing every day with slight variations in lunch and dinners.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see what happens and then I make a change. So it does take a level of discipline to be able to eat the same things and be okay with it. But I feel like that's like an amazing way to track what you're doing, because I'm not writing anything down. I'm just looking at the sheet of what I'm supposed to eat, and I'm following it really closely from probably when I first wake up to about 5:30 in the evening. And then when I eat with my family dinner, I do most of the cooking, so I can cook things in a similar way every day. So I've got like 4 or 5 meals that I'll cook pretty much. Like, I'm sure there's a meal that you have almost every week.
Oh yeah. I mean, I feel like I have to get out of ruts more often than
other way around. Yeah. And so it's really easy. And we have like 5 or 6 meals that our family loves. Like, we've got a fish meal, we've got a taco meal, we've got a burger meal, a steak meal, a chicken meal. And they're things I know how to cook. I can do them super fast and everybody's happy with it. Mm-hmm. And so I just eat the same 5 or 6 meals and then look at the week. And then I look back and I'm like, oh, I might need to adjust this snack. And so I think the cool thing about that too is having the mindset of I don't have to be at my destination tomorrow gives you the ability to think long term and to like plan it in a way that's really not a big hassle. It's really like relaxing. You're just doing your thing and you become a third party observer of yourself. It's kind of like when we race, right? Like, one of the best mentalities to be in when you're racing is someone observing what you're doing, because you can make really good decisions that aren't just emotion based. And you can be like, oh, I actually feel pretty good and I've got a mile left. It would probably be a good idea to go for it right now.
Yeah.
And I think doing that same thing with the nutrition and just adjusting things and not being super emotional about it, but just being factual and observing what's happening and then changing for the goal.
Yeah. Which is, it's one of the funny things about nutrition and food in general. Like, you just look at how we identify as like vegan, or like we put, like, there's a tendency to put so much of our identity into how we eat, and like food being such a cultural thing too. And I think that was a big thing with the Chlorify test, is like to get some hard numbers around what your body's doing with your nutrition. I think I've been kind of blown away how useful it's been for me to actually see hard numbers in that respect and detach a little bit. Cause I think a lot of that emotion is partially because it's also very confusing when you start to like sort through the nutrition stuff, and people, and that sucks. It sucks when you're like, do I buy into this? Do I not? And it can get all out of whack. So, and we were talking a little bit before where I feel like, man, I get so worn out by being in the nutrition area for too long. And so, like, my suggestion is, we're going through this for you guys, is like, be willing, like, your experiment of one, and like your own context matters with where you're at in your own nutritional journey. So like, be willing to try stuff out, right? And like, see if it works for you and see how you respond and how you feel. And I think it's so interesting that a lot of times for me, like with nutrition, like, and nutrition is interesting too, because it's like, it affects your body, it affects your brain, right? And how your mind's working, how you feel about your life. I think it's cool when you start to make changes that are affecting like your biological system, and it makes a difference in how you feel. And all of a sudden it can change your perspective in hindsight when you're looking back. Say something like protein, where you're like, I increased my protein intake and all of a sudden like I feel a little bit better. Now I'm recovering a little bit faster. So I think it's cool for you probably to like look back, right, and be like, oh, I can see where these changes over time have like really accumulated.
So I think there's several like super good points there. One is that different things work for different people.
Yeah.
I really like following, I think his name's Lane Norton, Bio Lane is his handle, but he's so sciencey and like has such good research mind, like a good research mind, and gives good feedback. And one of the things he always talks about is how there's not one way. If there was only one way, then everyone else would be unsuccessful and there'd be only one group that would be successful in how they feel and how they eat, yeah, right? Like, it would truly be not a question whether you should be a vegan or not. It would truly be not a question whether you should eat only meat. But it just so happens that there are people that eat primarily or only meat. There are people that eat primarily or only vegetables. And they're still fine. they're still surviving and they're thriving. And so I think it is important to find like that identity, if you want to call it that, for you, but then look for some hard numbers. And I don't think you have to do Chlorify. You can use your experience and you can use your experiment of one to figure out what works for you. It just might take a little bit longer without some blood test and, you know, Chlorify and gene test. And then the other thing with tracking stuff, I do feel like if you have to write everything down that you eat for the rest of your life, you're not in a good spot. Like, I feel like you've got to get past that. I've never met anyone that writes everything down that they eat all the time and they're happy doing it. It seems like everyone has a struggle with that because it's so complex and it's so much information. So you've got to create some type of rhythm within your system. Whatever your system is, there's got to be a rhythm there that works for you.
Yeah. And interesting, we talked about this a little bit too. And it's funny that like one of the things that you're trying to address was your amount of stress in your life and how that maybe was affecting even like your caloric burn rate. I think we all have certain strategies that work well for us too, because it's like there's a whole context to our relationship with food. And I think it's funny because you and I think come from like from the first test to like our second test and our journeys and all that, we almost have like complete opposite experiences of and goals of what like we were trying to do. Because I was trying to go something in that first test, and we were talking a little bit before the podcast, right, where in my first test I felt like I was in that week, my perceived exertion that week was really high, right? Like I was doing marathon training. I just felt exhausted from a few of these really big workouts that I did. But my burn rate was like that of like, you know, a pretty normal American, right? Like just somebody, it didn't look like somebody training for a marathon. So I was looking at that, like, why did that happen that way? Why was my body maybe limiting my caloric output? I think I was also thinking like the distribution of what days were maybe super high burn rates, that because this is the average over a week, like, so I had some days are really big and maybe under fueled, and then some days that I just felt dog tired, was like just sleeping a ton and like ran super slow, and my output was probably very low, but my perceived exertion over that entire week was super high. Fast forward to the next test, my output was up from 3,000 calories a day to 5,200 calories a day. I'm running more miles, doing a better job restricting my, like how hard my workouts were, like cumulative volume is up. And for me, and I was eating, I was kind of going back to a little bit more of like my intuitive eating strategy of like listening to my body, I was almost trying to like overfuel the workouts, where I was like, I want to make sure that my body is not going into depletion when it's really needing calories. And so for me, it was on the opposite end of the spectrum of seeing like, wow, I was able, like, this is how my body responded when it was like really well supported. Also, I'm doing some of your recommendations with the supplements, you know, upping my protein a little bit too. So I think you were trying to manipulate things to be more efficient. I was trying to manipulate things for my body to feel maybe a little bit more safe to put out these higher volume numbers.
Yeah, right? you were going for a diet manipulation that allowed a higher output
and consistency. So like you were saying, you've had consistent running over years. I think unfortunately I've gone through this thing, and this is where psychology gets totally into your relationship with food too, where I've gone through these huge swings of like dieting and getting off of diets, and then also just training kind of going along with that as well too. So my goal, and this is where I mentioned context earlier, I think something that can be a fatal thing for us is when we look at somebody else's nutritional strategy and go, that's it, like that worked for them, it's gonna work for me. I think you gotta take in the context of who you are, what you're coming from, because yeah, I think it was a big thing for me to go, I'm going to prioritize consistent training, and I'm like for the, like, I'm going to shelf the weight for the time being. I'm not even going to worry about it. I'm just going to get consistent training. So I think, like, your body, I think, was really ready. You know, you've had consistent training. I think your body is probably really ready to do some manipulation to get it to a more efficient state, right?
Well, it's so funny because it's almost like we were jealous of each other.
Yeah.
I was like, when I saw your test, I was like, dang, I want to be a little leaner. I want to burn a little less. And you're like, golly, man, if I could burn more, I could do more. But no, I think you're right. I think that's the position we were probably both in. Like, and one of the things is the only thing I've changed is my nutrition. Mm-hmm. And I'm performing and I feel so much better because I have so many years of running between 50 and 60 miles a week. I mean, in high school, that's what I ran. In college, I ran a good bit of 80s, 90s, and even after school for a few years. But you're talking about a eight or nine year period where I was really running more.
Yeah.
And then from that point to now, I've still just run somewhere in that 50 to 70 range. So I just wanted to feel what it felt like to be, you know, 13 pounds lighter. And the surprise to me has been that I wish I would have done this sooner, because my cognitive ability and my mental output and just the way I feel, I have this theory that I think that we're chronically protein depleted as a society. I think that we're just so low on that macro. And there's so many opportunities for carbohydrates that are simple to absorb, and foods are just not hard enough to digest, and they're not slow enough. And I think that's part of the reason why we get into this like brain fog all the time. And I'll tell you a quick story about that from recently. So when I was at the Olympic trials last weekend, I've been so consistent on having solid sources of protein that's not high sugar. And this will get to our next thing about timing, yeah. Right? I've been really consistent with not having high sugar items when I'm not about to work out,
yeah,
or when I didn't just finish a workout, or when I'm not doing a workout. And so I was at the trials and we watched the race. You know, it started at 10. We watched the race for 2 hours. Man, I'm so hungry. And there's some food trucks behind us. And so we watched the men finish. And I was like, all right, we got about 20 minutes, 25 minutes before Sarah's going to be finishing and the ladies are going to come by. So Carmen and I went and got this pizza, like pineapple pizza, like, you know, super simple carbs, you know, lots of pizza sauce. And I haven't had that for lunch in forever, mm-hmm. Right? I've been so consistent. So I eat the whole pizza. I ate the whole thing. I'm so hungry. And I noticed about 30 minutes later, after the women had finished, man, I was like sad. Like I could feel like just my energy level was just, I was in like almost like a food like lull where I just wanted to go take a nap.
Yeah.
You know, I was just like, oh, I just feel so full and so dead. And I've learned, and if I had that to do over again, I totally would eat that pizza, by the way, because it was so good. But I've just learned in that moment to associate my psychology emotionally and mentally with what I eat.
It
drastically affects our lives. I mean, think about it. If you have two beers, you feel totally different than if you drink water. If you eat a pizza, you feel totally different than if you have like some baked chicken and green beans.
Yeah.
And so I think not forgetting that 30 minutes to an hour later, whatever we eat is going to drastically affect our mood, our mental performance, And I've heard people say before, hey, if you have a big time business meeting and you're going to negotiate or you're going to do something that matters, don't eat a complex, heavy, or like super sugary meal because you're not going to be as sharp.
Yeah.
So I think that, we hear a lot about people demonizing sugar, never eat sugar again, or never eat meat again, or never eat fill in the blank. I think those statements, if they're qualified with timing, they can be okay to say. So yeah. I could say, I really want to do my best to never have like a super sugary lunch.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I'm never going to have ice cream again.
Yeah.
I'm just going to time it right. And then the flip side of that is if you're fueling for your marathon week and you're not wanting to be run down, man, you better have some gels during your long runs. You better have the most processed food you can find.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's right. I mean, maybe that's where like the chlorified test was interesting and being able to, I think it's good to identify like I think making that association, like you're saying mood, like all the feedback mechanisms that your body's giving you on what you're doing. Right. Cause training also, like for me, I use mood as a barometer of like, am I overtraining? Like, have I gone too hard? Cause my mood is like down. Oh man, I totally lost my train of thought. I probably ate too complex of a meal before this. but I think
maybe talking about timing yeah, of things.
But I think like identifying like what the like thinking about what the cause is, right? So did I eat pizza? Was that kind of, can I see that association there? Cause yeah, I think you know, for me a huge thing has been that realization of like I need to really be feeding my body well when I'm putting out these big efforts. And sometimes that's like, can be hard. Like, I think that's a thing that, and that's the feedback a lot of people give. It's like, it's hard to eat enough in say like marathon training, like your gut's maybe not going to respond as well. Like those can be places where you feel like you have to force the issue. And if you're, you know, if you've over a long time been weight conscious, it can be very tempting to undercut those calories and be like, I'm getting like just getting so focused on trying to create deficits so that you're losing weight. And like there's
here's what I think happens there, because we're all competitive, right? Mm-hmm. You're trying to compete. You're trying to create a caloric deficit. And I've done this. I've caught myself. I've done it before and I've gotten better at not doing it. You're trying to create a caloric deficit and you're doing well. And then you're in a situation where it's time to eat, but you decide you're not going to because you're going to get a little extra.
Yeah, it's like this association of like less is more when it comes to nutrition. Like I'll be a little bit lighter. And that's where I feel like I've made this transition to intuitive eating like years ago, and I've kind of floated in and out of it. But part of that was like almost developing like this relationship with my body where it's like I'm thinking about taking care of it, like as if like it was a child and it's screaming for food. If you're just like, hey, be quiet, that wouldn't be like a kind thing to do to that child, right? Yep. You'd give them something to eat, you'd give them a snack. So for me, and again, like this kind of personal aspect of what's your own relationship with food, what's maybe the problems that you're creating and doing the appropriate solution to it and coming up with strategies to address that, right? So for me, if I feel well, all of a sudden, like the overeating later in the day is way less of an issue because my body's not in this starved state when it's really needing those calories.
Yeah, and so I think a couple things. One is to further connect that association with how you feel when you eat something and create positive associations with certain foods that you want to eat because they make you feel good. I think that's a great way to do it. The way I started doing that is I journal an hour later after I eat. I just write down how I felt. And I started looking at what I was eating and how I felt. And this is my personal experience. This might not work for everyone, but I believe I could make the argument that if we were to seek after as unprocessed foods as possible, when we're not about to do a hard workout, we're not doing a hard workout, and we didn't just finish one. So as unprocessed as possible, that provides a super high satiety and you feel good and your cognitive function is super high. And then supplementing with protein throughout the day, 3 times a day at least, in regular intervals and regular amounts. And then when you are training or about to do a hard workout, you go for the most processed foods. Yeah. And you get as much of them as you can. And you're talking about training your gut. Training your gut to handle 500-600 calories of, you know, gels and drink and bars and candy and whatever you can get in. I feel like it is very easy to get the right amount of food in. But those two ways of thinking are so contradictory. You do have to float in and out of the two thought processes.
Yeah.
And be like, hey, it's go time. I am 90 minutes out. I'm going to have coffee. I'm going to have straight sugar and honey with it. I'm going to drink my drink. I'm going to have a gel. And now I've got 350 calories on board. I'm going to eat a piece of toast an hour before that with some jelly on it. Got 500-600 calories on board. And then you're going to have it regular intervals during the workout. And then you're going to do some protein and sugar after. Dude, you can get like 1200 calories in, in like 2.5 hours. And then that sets you up really nicely to go with the high quality, as good a quality and as low process as you can handle the rest of the day. And then I feel like that's where your cognitive function improves through the day. You're not hitting yourself with all these calories that you don't know what to do with. And you're getting all these energy spikes during the day and crashes. So that is the general. Now, there's more specifics to that, I think, to make it successful. But that's the general way that I think I'm going to eat the rest of my life. Like I feel like I found a really good rhythm where I'm fueling well, my energy's good, and it's stable. And I've experimented with quite a few people at this point, just allowing them to follow a similar rhythm. And it's going really, really well with this duality of thought process. It's like you hate processed foods during the day and you love them when it's time to work out. And that gives you that outlet too, if you like Snickers bars.
Yeah, 100%.
Have a Snickers bar. Just do it right after you finish your long run.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think like it's funny because where I've come from is like trying to eat ultra healthy. So like the eating the whole foods, like I've been all about that for a long time. But then it's funny that it's been the pervading problem has been the like cutting the in workout nutrition and not feeling that well enough that creates those problems then elsewhere where like then you do have cravings for like sugary things because like at some point your body was needing that and you didn't give it to it. And so like it's going to create at some point it's going to catch up with you. But I found that when I am really feeling that it's like I don't really have those cravings very much because it's like I almost finish my workouts being like, do I really need to eat something else? Yeah, like I could use a break here from ingesting any glucose. So I think it's super helpful. And so this being our first point, right, that timing is key. I think like for athletes, this is such a huge part. And, you know, when we're talking about eating whole foods, like then you're also getting a lot of micronutrients like elsewhere in your diet that, you know, obviously is a huge component of good nutrition.
Yeah. And again, like the biggest thing for me, and the biggest thing I think that everybody really wants is we all want to feel good. Mm-hmm. Right? Like I asked somebody the other day, would you rather be overweight and be super happy? Or would you rather be at your, you know, ideal racing weight and just feel horrible all the time and just be like super upset? And almost everyone chooses, dude, I just want to be happy.
Yeah.
And I think the compromise there is both are available.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit more effort and like some conscientiousness about what you're doing. But that higher cognitive function, feeling better and accomplishing your goals, man, that just sounds fun to me. And I think that stems from the mentality of how many things can I do right? And then you get into the psychology of it. You get into the sleep. You get into lowering stress, which what I did to lower stress is really, really simple. I just started breathing more per day and taking like regular times where I just go.
Yeah.
And trying to slow down.
Yeah.
Just trying to slow down a little bit, not trying to get. I've actually been trying to remind myself, if I do things better, but I get less done, I'm happier with that.
Yeah.
And I think it showed up in my burn rate. My burn rate went down like 300 calories a day, 250 calories a day, just by being conscious of stress levels.
Yeah. That's interesting. Have you ever tried, I think people would call it box breathing or square breathing, where
no.
It's like, you should try it sometime. It's something I use because it's funny how that will happen. Sometimes I will all of a sudden become aware, like I'm stressed right now. It'll just hit me out of nowhere where I realize I've like my thoughts are racing. Like I'm just kind of falling some weird track of thinking. And I think so often you can just keep going about your day in that state and not even realize that you're living there. But I'll do this thing where it's like you breathe in for four counts, you hold for four counts, out for four counts, hold for four counts. So you can kind of just imagine.
Oh, like yeah.
But it's kind of like we did that that holistic breathing or the holotropic breathing in Flagstaff for our camp.
Yeah.
But it raises CO2 in the blood, which has something to do with like your vagus nerve. Yeah. So I think it's pretty crazy. I will notice, I can almost like feel like my heart rate drop a little bit. And I just feel this sense of relaxation come back in. And it's so great to jump back into whatever you were doing without this like stress cloud floating around it, where I really do feel like you were saying, the quality can be so much better when it's like, everything you're doing is flowing from a more calm place where you're just not, it's not coming because you're stressed about doing something. It's coming from like more of a, I imagine it just being like a more passionate flow coming out of you with whatever you're doing.
You know, and I think that's alluding to an idea of, you can't just think your way out of stress. We also know you can't eat your way out of stress.
You can try to, for sure.
Yeah. You know, stress eating. And so it creates this reverse idea of, instead of me trying to think my body into a good condition, I'm actually going to just be kind to my body and create some kind of manipulation that's maybe more directed towards the physical body, and then allow my body to affect my mind.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like this feedback loop, right? Where it's like, yeah.
And I think that's why I've gotten so into tracking what foods make me have mental clarity and make me feel better. Because it's such an easy thing. If I want to be clear, have a clearer mind, have higher cognitive ability, and I identify that, you know, the food truck pizza just totally gets me out of whack, I may still eat it because it tastes good. And I think I don't want to create this scenario where, you know, like if you invite me out to eat, I'm just going to sit at my house and cook myself, because I don't want to eat something that potentially could throw me off slightly mentally. But at the same time, if I do go have dessert with my wife somewhere or whatever, and 30 minutes later, I don't feel great. It was amazing at the Olympic trials to be walking around and be like, yeah, I don't feel amazing, but I just had that pizza. And so
Yeah.
I was able to see it as a thought cloud that's passing by, right? Like, I don't feel great, but it's passing by, and I know why. And I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole of there's something wrong with me. I just need to go like sit down and watch TV for a few minutes, and then I'll be fine afterwards after I digest this, you know, high sugary food that I just had in the middle of the day.
Yeah. Which it's funny because that's kind of like what I like to play around with meditation is trying to get to that place where it's like we're like a our brain, everything, it's like we're like a biological being, right? So to kind of like observe the whole thing happening and realize like I'm not a bad mood. I'm not in that bad mood. A bad mood is like happening because of something that's going on, right? Be able to observe that rather than just being like all tangled up in that web of like, I'm in a bad, like you can kind of just spiral, right? If you're like, I'm sad, man, maybe. And then you start interpreting everything that's happening, right?
Yeah, you interpret everything through the lens of sadness. And instead, you should be interpreting everything through the lens of pineapple pizza.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Right? But I wore this, you know, a lot of people have done this, worn a glucose monitor and looked at, it was really, really interesting when I had it on. And what I would see was, when I had a whole bunch of sugar before a workout, my glucose would spike and it would slowly come down. And then when I started the workout, it would go back up because you're mobilizing energy into the blood to use, right? And basically I would catch the workout at the right time because I fuel 90 minutes before, and I'd catch it at the right time where I was still excited to do the workout. I knew I was about to go do one and I was going to use all this energy. But then if I had something super sugary during the day and I would catch it on that downslope, it's like once that downslope started to level out and stay there for just a minute, I'd be like, oh, I just don't feel good. And then I would start to come back up a little bit and normalize, and I would feel fine.
Yeah.
And so like that was helpful. And I think one of the cool things as coaches is our job is to go through the process and understand it so that when someone is confused, we can come behind them and say, hey, here's what's going on. Like, I've been through this before. I know where you're at. Take some comfort. You're going to get through it. Because everyone's not going to be able to do a glucose monitor, the chlorophyte test twice,
a
gene test to figure out what supplements you need to take. Take all these supplements and figure out which ones work and spend all their time researching every little thing.
Yeah.
Like, so I think that's the responsibility like that we have, and it's fun, like, and is to look into all this stuff and like break it down so somebody else can benefit from it.
Totally. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think we've given like a really good broad overview of kind of our take on nutrition. So let's get into some of the specific recommendations. So first of all, because I think, you know, it's like we kind of talk about this thing of context, who you are, and I think we have different approaches and strategies, but then there's these underlying principles that I think are useful for all of us, right? Like, I think that thing of eating whole foods, you know, unprocessed, lots of fruits and veg and like high protein, you know, like you have almonds in there. I think that stuff is going to be useful for everybody across the board. I think feeling your workouts useful for everybody across the board. So timing wise, anything else to add? I know you said like you were eating kind of a easier digestible meal an hour and a half before your workouts, right?
Yeah. And working out in the morning, I actually drink most of my calories in the morning.
Yeah.
But I think it's totally fine. If you were to have like anything that's easily digestible, like simple toast and jelly, amazing, or honey. You know, there's been a lot of research about like oatmeal being not as good of a source of fueling as kind of it was thought at one point. And I don't really know about that because I've had success with oatmeal too in the past. Mm-hmm. Like as a pre, I just feel like if you're going to have something a little bit heavier, trying to get it like 2.5 hours out is better.
Yeah.
And then I just like gels. I just use, you know, 2 gels before I work out and then go do 1 during. And the Martin gels seem to work amazing. I love ketones. That video you sent me was amazing. Those guys are going at it. Those guys are going at it on the ketones. So the ketones argument right now, as far as I understand it, is, okay, I do 30 grams of ketones before, and I use the HVMN.
And I think that you're doing a high dosage, which I think was the primary thing they were talking about, right? Is that you just have to take a lot of that one.
Yeah. And they were, so the Delta company is saying that theirs is better because it gets to 2 to 3 millimoles of ketones. And the HVMN only goes to 1.7, but if you take 30 grams, it gets closer to 2.
Yeah.
So it's, and they're saying it makes you drunk, which I don't feel that at all.
Yeah. I don't feel like you're not, it's not like you're like someone who drinks a lot of alcohol. So it should probably hit you pretty hard.
No, I do feel like a heightened level of focus. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested in all cards on the table. I have not taken the Delta one. I would love to try it.
Yeah, I was curious to try that one. Yeah.
It is like triple the cost though.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, I think, like in some ways, I think, you know, with some of the companies seeking out a more cost-effective version, you know, I think that's nice to try to get it out to more people. Yeah, the ketones, that's definitely one of those topics where it's like you get into the weeds with it, and I think at the end of the day, if you like it and it works for you,
and those guys are out for blood with each other, like they're really,
I've heard that
they're really going after it.
The people, like the owners of some of those companies, I think they are like it's like barefoot running or something. It's a race.
It's a race to the dollars is what it is. They're trying to assert their product as the number one, but we really don't know. I mean, I'm going to try the Delta and check that out, but I love the HVMN. I think it works. I think it works amazingly well. I think I feel better when I do it. My wife's used it. Several people have, but I do think you need to take like 20 or 30 grams of it for it to work.
Well, so maybe we can just touch on that a little bit, because again, like ketones could be an entire episode all on their own if you're really pulling everything apart. But I was listening to some stuff about ketones, I think, can like lower the pH in your blood, so it's really good to, I think they were getting good results of pairing it with a bicarb, right? And I think maybe you were experimenting that with that.
Oh yeah.
So what was your experience?
I feel like that putting those two together is like just an unbelievable combination. I mean, I just feel so much more stable energy-wise. The way I would describe it is the bicarb definitely allows you to do a tempo run faster and not accumulate lactate.
So are you using the Martin bicarb system?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, and man, I don't know if this is a good recommendation or not, because this is pretty outlandish, but I have a really strong stomach.
Yeah.
Like I just never have any stomach issues. And so I'm actually taking way over the amount they recommend.
Really? Because I think I haven't tried it, but that's like the primary complaint is that it can cause like significant digestive issues, right?
Yeah. No problem here.
Okay.
So, nice. So I actually put in that I weigh like 250 pounds. And then I ordered the higher level. And I've slowly built up to taking the full dose. And I think there's additional benefit if you can handle it. So again, like my goal with myself is to experiment like pretty intensely so that I can share like the limits of stuff and figure it out with other people. So I would not recommend trying that your first time. You might end up with like a really bad stomach issue. And I think part of like what I'm trying to do is maximize the final days that I have as like a competitive, fast athlete. I think I've got some more left.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm just excited, man, to be in the sport and running pretty well and be healthy and be able to try some stuff that is going to give me a chance to run fast as a 40-year-old. Yeah. And I'm excited that my weight's in a good spot and that there is like bicarb and HVMN stuff to try and experiment with. I think it's super fun.
Yeah. Well, I think that's also too, like, cause in looking into that, it's like one of the studies I was listening to a doctor, this guy did some studies based on this combination of ketones and bicarb. A lot of the tests or a lot of the studies are based on like cyclists doing like a, like an hour or more of like moderate exercise followed by like, say like a 30-minute time trial. So it's like kind of specific to that cycling sort of world where that's a type of way like a race might play out where, so you're using ketones early in the race when you're doing like sub maximal efforts and then you're sparing glycogen. So then you can like get those glycogen stores when you really need them at the end.
Yep.
They also had some adverse effects in cyclists doing a 30K time trial when they did it immediately, because they were saying that there could be some issues like accessing glycogen when you also have ketones in the blood, right? So, but I feel like, and this is something I've heard Peter Attia say, that like studies always have some nuance to them, that like there's always some things that are hard to say, like there's factors like how old were the cyclists in that condition, right? And like there's so many factors. I feel like this is why it's worthwhile to experiment on yourself, because it's unlikely, sure, I think, that you're going to find a test that's going to exactly correlate to you,
replicate
and
you.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the other thing that I do as a safety guard on the nutrition before racing. I'm done with everything that I'm eating and drinking 90 minutes before.
Yeah.
Like, and I understand caffeine, you can push it closer, and probably ketones and bicarb, you can push it closer. But, and that maybe is part of the reason why I don't have gut issues when I race or run, is I finish it a little bit earlier than recommended.
Yeah.
So I usually go my caffeine, I'm done at like 90 minutes, and my ketones, I'm done at 90 minutes. And then the bicarb, I eat it at 90 minutes, which only takes 2 minutes to eat it. So it's basically like I'm going caffeine, ketones, bicarb.
And you're doing the bicarb all at one time.
All at one time. Yeah. Yeah. Just within a couple minutes. And then, but no, that's the formula that I've been using. And then we can talk about the supplement side too.
Well, real quick, have you done, because bicarb, for people who don't know, it's essentially is
baking soda.
Yeah. But the Martin, he also uses their like gel, right? Like, I think it is supposed to be easier to digest. Have you done just baking soda ever?
I did in 1999. Okay. In school. And man, so this is from the 1970s. This research is, this is not new.
Yeah.
And they did it in the 70s and it improved 800 meter race times by like 2 and 3 seconds. It's significant. Yeah. But in all the research, it produced what they call gastrointestinal distress, which is code word for explosive diarrhea.
It might be an embarrassing race also. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So we tried it in undergrad and it caused some bathroom issues. I didn't have them during, but right after. Yeah. And I was like, I'm never doing that again. But the Martin system is in a pellet and it's in a gel. And so when you eat the pellet and the gel, it digests lower in the gut. So it basically passes further into the gut and it digests a little bit slower. so that you don't get this hit of baking soda in your upper intestines right away. My understanding is it makes it past your stomach a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I mean, yeah. And that's, I think it's like 4 servings is like $70 or something. So you're paying like a premium for that, but essentially you might not be able to do it otherwise if you're having like significant digestive issues.
I definitely wouldn't recommend baking soda. That's a problem.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So, let's get into the supplementation.
So, man, I've gone really far down the rabbit hole on this one. So initially, I just was like, I'm going to take whatever is recommended for general health. So I started taking AG1. And then I realized that some of the stuff in AG1 is not enough if you're a really high-level athlete. Yeah. And particularly like D3, some probiotics, a couple of the things I recommended you take. And then I went another layer and I took this class, and then I'm doing a second one at Harvard that is, the first one was more of a general. And then this second one starts in April, and it's gene testing and synthesis. Sequencing, gene testing and sequencing. And so part of this is looking at gene methylation test. Mm-hmm. So this test is a cotton swab on the inside of your mouth, and then it gives you this feedback of all the vitamins and minerals that you are more than likely not going to absorb in particular forms. So one of the genes people talk a lot about is the MTHFR. And they call it the mother effer gene because it looks like it's MTHFR. Well, so this gene is related to folate and your absorption of folic acid. So 40% of people don't absorb folic acid very well. And then that's involved in like so many processes in the body. Mm-hmm. So I have the worst gene for this and didn't know it, which is I don't even absorb methylfolate, which is the second most readily available form. I'm sensitive to methylfolate. So like my body doesn't like it as much as other people do. So I take a third form called folinic acid. So what I was able to do with that test is look at all the supplements I was taking and now target them specific to me. So instead of saying, an adenosyl cobalamin is another form. I'm not probably saying that right, but it's a form of B12. And the form I was taking was cyan cobalamin. Well, it really is complex.
Yeah.
But I actually was able to spend about $30 less a month on my supplements after taking the gene test because I realized I didn't need some of the stuff. Like my body is absorbing certain things really easily.
Yeah.
And then now I have the blood tests specific to those things. So I can get my hemoglobin, hematocrit, ferritin, you know, cholesterol, all the normal CBC stuff. And I can go back and order the specific targeted tests for those things. So yeah, I'm trying to just get in this mindset of going as deep as I can on optimizing the nutrition. Because I'm at the point, unlike where you're at, I'm not going to run 90 miles a week.
Yeah.
My volume is maxed out. I just know that with my current, you know, coaching schedule and life schedule, I'm happy where I'm at volume wise. So I'm trying to look for another place to work.
Yeah.
Right? Like another area where I can put energy and figure things out. So it's been like this gene methylation testing and, you know, whatever else I can find that makes sense. I want to go down that path and continue to refine the process of the nutrition side.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think that's so cool. Cause like, do you think that we all have some sort of deficiency that we're unaware of? Like, do you think that's likely, or do you think most people are covering their needs?
So I'm in the early stages of this, learning about it for sure. And it's an early stage, just research in general. Like, it didn't exist, you know, several years ago. So I think so. And I think it's as a result of like really poor food quality.
Yeah.
And if we had the right food quality, then we would take the natural forms of those things, convert them where we needed them, and we'd be fine.
Yeah.
So I'm 2 months in changing my supplementation. So I don't really know. I think I feel a lot better. Mm-hmm. But it'd be interesting to see a year later. Like,
yeah.
You know, listen, if I end up running like 4:14 for the mile, it will be because of all of these nutritional changes that I've made. That will be why, because it's not, I'm not changing the training. I'm lighter and I feel like I'm recovering better. So, I mean, I'm just excited to see where the path goes, but, I think so.
Yeah. So you touched on this a little bit, probiotics. What's your thought on probiotics? Cause I think also talking about like mood and stuff and like gut biome being a crucial role in that and how we, you know, digest food and incorporate all these nutrients into our body. What has your research brought you to on that?
This is from Lane Norton. He talks a lot about prebiotics are actually better than probiotics. Yeah.
Which
right?
is like
which
kind
are
of just
fiber.
Like fiber, yeah.
Fiber. Yeah, it's fiber from whole foods. The reason I added the probiotics is personal experience, really. I look back through my running logs at the time where I ran the best. And I have written down what I was taking during those times, like supplement-wise. So in like 2002... I knew somebody at Garden of Life.
Okay.
The supplement company.
Yeah.
And I just wrote them a letter and I was like, hey, I'm trying to make the Olympic trials in the steeple. Would you guys be willing to send me some free product? And, so through this contact, dude, they sent me an unlimited, ordering code for the website.
Oh, wow.
So from like 2000 to 2005, I was taking probably $1,200 a month worth of stuff.
Oh my gosh.
And it was all from Garden of Life.
Yeah.
And dude, I ran all my PRs during that time.
That's crazy.
And so I looked back at what I was taking, tried to replicate some of it. And one of the things that I always felt like really helped was their probiotic.
Yeah.
I just really felt like that was huge. And so I just added that back to the program. But I don't know. I mean, maybe you could do without it completely, but my mentality at the moment is if I think it's going to help, I'm going to try it and just leave it in the program because it's definitely not going to hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. Little side note, something I just came across with some cycling stories, they're talking about this girl wrote something in Bicycling Magazine about fecal transplants.
Oh, I saw that. That's so stupid.
Have you heard of that though? So, I mean, she had Lyme disease.
And then got a fecal transplant from someone else and then her gut biome improved.
Yeah, but so they found something, Provotella, it's like a microorganism that I just thought this was interesting. It was, there was 10% of non-athletes had this microorganism, 50% of like amateur, and then 100% of elite cyclists.
Huh, I thought that is very interesting.
Yeah, just an interesting thing of like something specific about your microbiome that's correlated with like elite performance. Right?
Dude, I don't know that I want a fecal transplant. I think I'd just be, I think I would just be sub-elite and not be elite.
Yeah. But I mean, it's kind of a curious thing of like thinking about like this whole thing, even with like Chlorify, right? Like the I forget his name, but the coach of Christian Blumenfeld, the guy Olav, I reference a bunch. He was talking about, I think they got measured, and he said they're working well above that 2.5, that PAL rate of 2.5, right? And he thinks that that's something that I thought about, like maybe one of the aspects of like super elites is the ability to work at those higher workloads, and maybe has something to do with the like ability to actually ingest,
metabolize,
yeah, that much nutrients into your body.
Sure. Yeah.
So this aspect of probiotics and prebiotics of really supporting your digestive system, it makes a lot of sense to me for athletes that like we're also like we're putting a heavy workload on our bodies, but we're putting a heavy digestive load on our bodies.
That's
as
right.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. Like to me, it's just like if there's something that's not going to hurt, that's kind of like an insurance thing, like why not just have it in there? And then, you know, one of my good friends is an exercise physiologist, and she challenged me with like, you're doing too many things.
Like to like limit it so you actually see what's changing.
Yeah. She was like, you need to cut some things out so you know what's really helping. And I was like, you know, at this point, I don't know that I necessarily want to do that, because what if it's the combination of the things? Like, I just want to continue to learn, but I definitely don't want to limit things to try and figure out the right thing that might not be working. Because I think that's almost impossible for me to do that. That would be so hard to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I think that's just hard. It's like, I've heard somebody say this about that guy, Brian Johnson, who's doing all those studies on longevity with himself, right? Where it's like, at the end of the day, he'll learn some things that may be applicable to other people, but they might not be either, right? So like really, maybe something would be better is a broader scale study on all of those aspects that might bring longevity. So it's hard to know. I think, again, it's kind of like an experiment of one, and you could at least say that things certainly don't hurt that you're doing, right? And maybe are helpful.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It seems to me, I mean, I think I'm aware of a lot of the things you're doing, and we were talking about this before. A lot of it, I feel like, is pretty well-founded stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, say like, so you're taking AG1, right, to kind of cover your basis on a lot of vitamins and nutrients, probiotics, supplemental, because AG1 has some probiotics in it, right, and prebiotics.
It does, yeah.
Vitamin D, which I've also heard a lot of people, I mean, that's like been the one supplement that across the board with every nutritionist I've ever worked with recommended vitamin D.
Yep.
Fish oil, right? So you're getting some omega-3s in there too. You also had one of your recommendations was turmeric.
So here's the interesting thing. That was since I did the gene test. I'm actually, the gene expression I have for curcumin, which is in that turmeric, and turmeric was contraindicated for turmeric. So I stopped taking that.
Okay. Interesting.
So there's certain things that you either don't absorb well in their form, or and that's why I like doing the gene test, is it just gives you another hard data point, similar to Calorify, but it's specific to your supplementation.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I think, and this is like something, say, like iron. It's like, I think getting some blood work done, another step on top of that would be getting like this gene test, right? Where you start to just gather information about yourself. Cause yeah, you can just be more specific. Cause say like something like iron, it's like maybe you need to supplement it. Maybe it'd be really harmful to supplement it, right? So like if you can be specific, you can just be more calculated about what you're actually giving your body to utilize.
Yeah, but I mean, it is really hard.
Yeah.
Like what we're talking about doing, like eating properly and getting the right supplements, and there's just so many combinations of things, it's just really difficult to do, and to do it well for each person is different.
Yeah. Any other supplements that you would that you think are good for people across the board or for people to experiment with?
No, I think the basics are super important. I know that since my wife started taking AG1 every day too, that's been helpful. And there are others too. There's one, there's another green supplement that's not as expensive that a couple athletes are taking. Honestly, the reason I'm taking AG1 is because Carmen started ordering it and she likes it. And so I've just left it alone, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's fine.
And that's a funny thing. That's a good point. Is like, it's something I think comes up in studies a lot is like compliance with the dietary stuff, right? So it's like what to evaluate that for yourself. What am I going to be compliant with doing?
Yep. Right? Yep. Yep.
Cause
yeah, you really do have to think about, it's not going to help you if you don't follow it.
Yeah. And I think especially like say supplementation, I think it is such a huge thing to be consistent with it over time, right? Like you need your body to consistently be getting those additional nutrients that, and you've said this to me, it's like a lot of it, cause I the way I think about supplementation is like, you still want to do say something like probiotics, like maybe you're still trying to incorporate something like yogurt or kefir or something, or kimchi, like something that's going to also do that for your body, but you just take this base level probiotic pill every day. So you make sure you're never going without it, right? So you have that consistency. Yeah. So you're filling the holes, but you still try to, with your diet, take it in with whole foods as well.
Well, and the thing that we're talking about is performance.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably do without most of this and be generally healthy, and you might operate at, you know, 60% of where we're trying to operate and we're trying to teach people how to operate. And so I think the distinction there is like performance and being generally healthy are two totally different things.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is I was talking to one of my athletes about electrolytes, and Joe's talked about this too, that I think we maybe underestimate the amount of electrolytes that we need. Is I think you can also kind of normalize as runners, if you've done it for a long time, you can kind of normalize what you do. So maybe you're running, say if you were running 100 miles a week and you're running 60 miles a week, you're like, I don't really need all this stuff because I'm not really working that hard. Whereas like, I think sometimes we underestimate the demand that we put our bodies through as athletes. It's like, you maybe should be trying to crank all those things up a little bit higher, and say like protein being in that space as well of like, really making sure you're meeting those demands on a regular basis rather than potentially being low just for the sake of, I don't know. Sometimes it is kind of these debates, right? You can kind of get caught up in it and be like, do I need that much protein? Do I not? And maybe you're shorting yourself just for the sake of feeling right in this debate that's going on.
You know how I settle that debate in my mind is the thought process that I said before, which is how many correct things can I do?
Yeah.
Instead of trying to find the one or two, like having this attitude of how many things can I do today that are going to help me? And like, it's almost like a game. You're trying to do as many things right as possible.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to say, let me minimize, like, I want to be a maximalist when it comes to doing things right.
Yeah.
And then maybe a minimalist on possessions, right?
Yeah.
But I want to be, there's a quote, money spent on food is money well spent. Mm-hmm. Like that's the other thing too, is to give yourself a little bit of freedom. Like for me, if I'm going to tighten up my finances, I'm going to tighten it up on other areas and loosen it on the food, because food just makes me happy.
Yeah. 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 Well, and I think, yeah, especially when it comes to quality, it's like, again, back to that thing of like your body, the way you feed it, the way you support it is going to affect everything of your experience of life to a certain extent. Yeah. So protein, what we talked a little bit about like grams per kilogram. for runners, what do you think people should be shooting for?
I think somewhere in the 2.2 to 3 grams per kilogram is pretty solid. Once you get above 3, some people have a feeling of just like ultra fullness all the time, which is also uncomfortable, right? I'm operating more at like 3 to 3.5, and I don't feel full. I still feel hungry.
Yeah.
But I wonder if I've been doing it for quite a while now. I wonder if I've just gotten used to it. And so I think consistency is really important in the protein. Having it 3 times a day, I think, has been absolutely huge. It's just routine now. So I'm actually mix, and then I actually do a little bit of pre-run protein, mm-hmm. like first thing in the morning. I didn't mention that before. Like I'll have like 15 grams of protein first thing in the morning, and then I'll be running an hour and a half later. Mm-hmm. And then I'll finish another 15 grams after the run. And then I've got 30 grams before lunch, 30 grams before dinner.
Yeah.
So there's almost 100 grams of protein there before I've eaten any other foods.
Yeah. And I've heard that from some various doctors who said that that first meal just being very important, what you put in your body, the first meal of the day. And it's hard with runners because I feel like sometimes we are working out pretty quickly. So the digestive aspect of that can be challenging, but I would say maybe that can happen a little bit after your workout, what you're doing as well. But he was saying it's really important to make sure you're getting protein like pretty like first regular thing in the morning or like immediately after your workout.
Both. I try to do both. And then if you're going to alter that, like so say you're going to work out at 4:30 in the morning, which a lot of our athletes do, then I would have your protein drink before you go to bed. They're your last thing, like right before you go to bed.
For that too.
That'd be your first one. And then I'd have one after the workout. And then I'd have a third one, like sometime around dinner or lunch, either one, but you've still got 3 in the day. They're just spread out slightly different.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when it comes to protein sources, you know, animal products, I think, are going to have a more comprehensive amino acid profile, right? Whereas like plants, you're going to have to maybe be a little bit more diligent about how you do it. What are your thoughts on protein sources?
So I think that the reason people have trouble with protein drinks is more related to the additives than the actual protein. So an unflavored, I'm actually doing a mixture of Levels protein and Great Lakes collagen. I'm doing a mixture of that 3 times a day. And Joe is the one who recommended both of those, our nutritionist, Joe Butler. Thank you, Joe. And I think that unflavored, like super basic, is the way to go. And if you have to have flavoring, because it doesn't taste great, maybe doing like a small amount of like stevia or some kind of like natural flavoring that you put in it. Because I have yet to find a good protein supplement that is minimally flavored. Like most of them have just a massive amount of flavoring in them. And that's what messes with people's stomachs. Yeah. Or the coloring, the flavoring and the coloring. The sources, if you're going to be vegan or vegetarian, you have to have leucine with it. And that's another Lane Norton tip, like 5,000 milligrams of leucine per day. And if vegetarians don't have that, then they're not going to stimulate protein synthesis to the same level as the meat eater. Mm. So leucine seems to be the one amino acid that if you were going to eat an animal product, like that should be the one that you add to your protein. And you can take those in like capsules.
Mm, okay. And so would you need to take that
in addition to
with it, right? So whenever you're taking in your
you could take like your pea protein with some leucine, and got several athletes that I've recommended that to, and they seem to like it.
Yeah. Okay. And yeah, so then also the collagen, because so I've been doing the same, that same supplementation routine with the Levels protein, the collagen. What are your thoughts on collagen? Because I think something that I didn't use to supplement, but having gone into it more, it makes a lot of sense. So what are your thoughts on the collagen supplementation?
I think, again, it's just like checking those boxes.
Yeah.
And if you think about it from a dietary standpoint, we used to have a lot of collagen in our diet. Mm-hmm. It used to be in animal skins, bone marrow. Things used to get boiled in the bones. Like, we've stripped all those things away, and we've got like skinless chicken breast, boneless wings, boneless everything. And then people used to like sit around and chew on bones and like suck the marrow out of the bones.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of the collagen is, in like the tendons and ligaments and like sinews and all that stuff. We used to eat all those.
Yeah.
And they used to be boiled and cooked down to the point where you could eat them.
Yeah.
And that's no longer the case. And so it's just like trying to check those boxes again of things we're not getting in our diet that we used to get. And collagen has been shown to help with like tendon strength and extracellular matrix. So the space in between your muscles and ligaments, it's called like this extracellular matrix. And it's made up of primarily like fibers of collagen that are cross-hatched every direction. And so they've shown if you supplement with collagen that your extracellular matrix is firmer as you get older, and you can like improve it. And then you can improve like your tensile strength of the muscle and like just your overall health of the muscle. So that's the idea. It's like feeding the muscle what it is made up of.
Yeah. Yeah. Which it's funny, because I feel like as runners, we spend so much time not trying to not get injured, trying to do all sorts of exercises and things to take care of that. It's like something like collagen or additional protein, it's like it's such an easy thing to add into the program.
Yeah,
that it's like why not do that?
Well, and then back to like the run free holistic mindset, the other thing is, if you don't sleep, none of this matters.
Yeah
none of it matters. You could supplement all day long, and if you don't get any sleep, you're not going to rebuild.
So do you have any thoughts on nutrition and sleep? Because I know like some people like timing of how you eat and everything can play into that.
So I think an hour and a half before ideally you finish eating, your last thing that you eat. And the last thing that you eat, like I do a banana with some sun butter around 7:30 or 8 o'clock, and then that's it. And I think the mistake is trying to fast. Especially if you eat dinner at like 5 o'clock and you're a runner.
Yeah.
Like trying to fast, like you're going to break, you're going to go to the ice cream, like right before bed. Right.
Yeah.
And so having something that has some sweetness to it, like a banana or some berries, and then adding some protein to that as well, I think is a great idea. You just sleep better. And then magnesium has been huge for a lot of people too. And then there's like ashwagandha and melatonin. And I personally, I've never messed with that stuff. Like, I want to teach myself to sleep without a real sleep aid. And so the book I would recommend, I've recommended this a bunch, is Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. I think you read it, didn't you?
I still haven't read that one. I know I need to, because you've referenced it so many times.
Yeah. And I have the cliff notes on it that I try to send out to anybody who needs help. But there's like 10 or 12 tips that are just amazing for sleeping well, that I think are not nutrition, that are not nutritional, but the nutritional side is an hour and a half before, if you can finish eating and you're not digesting while you're sleeping, that helps. And then of course, caffeine, try to stop 6 hours before bed. Mm-hmm. It may be even 8 hours for some hyper responders with caffeine. Like if you're a hyper responder and you don't have caffeine often and you have like a coffee at 1 o'clock, it will still affect you at 10 at night.
I'm that way. Like I drink coffee like on a regular basis, but like I just have coffee in the morning because if I drink it at all later in the day,
you're not sleeping.
Yeah. And that's such a bummer when you go to sleep and you're just like, I'm awake.
So real quick, through this supplement that I did not know had caffeine in it, years ago, I accidentally took almost 1500 milligrams of caffeine.
Oh.
It was a vendor who dropped them off and it was unlabeled.
Okay.
And I ate it. I ate like four of them. They're like these little bites. And I did not realize that it had caffeine in it until like 1 o'clock in the morning when I couldn't sleep. I did not sleep again until the following night at 6 o'clock. I was wired for like, and the doctor said if I had had like a cardiac issue, that probably would have killed me.
Yeah, that's a lot of caffeine. That's
it was a ton. I think it was like 20 cups of coffee.
That must have felt terrible, man.
I actually felt really good until I realized what had happened. And then I watched three movies that night.
Oh god.
I just got up. I was like, I'm not sleeping. I watched three movies. I answered all my athlete emails. Did so much work. I was like 100% caught up for like a week. Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Well, I mean, I think that was a lot of stuff that I want to go over. Anything else on the nutrition stuff that you want to chat about today?
No, dude, that was a lot of good for somebody to take in. I guess the only other thing is, I feel like there's an unwillingness in this industry to make any kind of definitive statements.
Mm.
Like you should have protein 3 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we've gone too far on the, like, everybody's different.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think there's certain things that everybody can do.
Yeah.
Even though everybody's different. And I think there's certain things we all should be doing. And I think like those general principles, like that's what I want to dig into over my lifetime, the big concepts that everybody can do, and then let people create their own variation within it. But I think that's part of the reason why nutrition is so confusing, is because everyone's telling everybody you can do whatever you want and everybody's different. And so everybody's like, well, shoot, what do I do? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and that's the confusing thing, is then you get on the internet and you start to do research and you're maybe trying to get into studies, and it's like, and people are, you know, somebody's always going to pick apart any part of any nutritional claim, right? Somebody else is going to say that's completely wrong for all these reasons. And that could be valid in a lot of cases, because again, like these studies are always going to have something that's not quite right. Like maybe it's, like I was saying, isn't totally specific to maybe the application that you're applying it to. So yeah, I agree with you that at some point you have to proceed forward with some sort of method, right?
Some plan. Yeah. Some sort of guide and guidance that you're going to generally follow and see if it works. It's like the HVM and Delta guys. Like they're like really confident that they're right. I don't know who's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I may never know, but I'm going to try both ways for myself and make my own decision and then move forward with whichever one I think is the better one.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think what you can do is just share your experience. Like, this is my experience with it. And then like try it for yourself and
take it or leave it. Yeah. Take it or leave it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I do think it is important. Say like even say protein, like you were saying, maybe what you're taking bothers your stomach for some other reason besides the fact that it's protein. Maybe it's about finding the right source for you that works well and how your digestive system, just like what sits in your stomach well. And I think that's where there can be a lot of manipulation with your diet is, you know, the timing of your breakfast with when you work out, like all the different sources that you use, where you can just take, like the way that I use a lot of the information you gave me in terms of the actual food that I was eating was a lot of just like the macros and then making it fit
yep.
into like
yes,
the things
exactly.
I like to eat. Yeah.
You're just creating rhythm. You're just creating rhythm of what you're eating, when you're eating it, and what types of foods are going to match good macros for you.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and so I'd say like, whether it be paying attention to, like we were talking about the timing where you eat really simple things around your workouts, but then outside of your workouts, you're being pretty diligent to not do that. Cause one of the assumptions that you made, like with your whole take on nutrition was, you know, if you're eating something that essentially is like a simple sugar, when you're not working out, it's going to go towards fat, not towards energy. And that's like, right. It's like, you get debate about that. That's more or less true, but it's a good, and I think this is like kind of true of a lot of different thoughts is like, you can debate about the truth claim about a lot of things, but it's like, what is an effective thing to believe about this? What's actually going to bring about good results? And I think that accepting that claim is going to bring about good results because it certainly is not going to harm you to not eat sugar when you're being sedentary, right?
The only scenario that I have abandoned that thought process, if it's someone who's struggling to eat enough food.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, you're just trying to get volume.
Right, and you're just like, you know what? We're going to give up everything and just make sure that there's enough calories going in. But through our calorify tests, there definitely are people that are not eating enough food. And that's the only danger of that mentality. But assuming you're going for high performance, which we are, and assuming that you are eating adequate calories, that's a completely relevant assumption to make. And that just leads you to the path of eating slower digestible foods when you're not trying to digest things quickly for energy.
Yeah.
It's matching your energy level with the digestion of what you're eating.
Yeah. And I think there's a natural push towards, and that's where I think you can simplify it. And I've heard some other people talk about this. So like, if you want to simplify your thought process on the whole nutrition thing, it's like, just go towards like whole foods, good, like micronutrient density, like those foods, say like vegetables being on one far end of the extreme and like followed closely by fruit. It's like, they're just packaged with a lot of fiber, a lot of micronutrients, like lower density of calories in general, right? So it's like, it's just probably going to affect your body in a more positive way eating those foods. Whereas if you're eating processed foods, it's just probably going to affect your body in a more negative way if you're not currently exercising or exercising pretty soon. Yeah.